let's get this party started then. Yeah. Starting the broadcast! In three... Wait, it does a countdown for me. I'm good. You are listening to the Frilla Bros Tech Podcast, episode 177, which is a totally legit and definitely not fraudulent episode.
Episode 177 of the Furlow Bros Tech Podcast. Today is February the 15th, 2015. I'm Matthew Dean Furlow, and my brother, who's been struck by Cupid's arrow, is James Furlow.
Yeah, I suppose that I have been, haven't I? That's cool.
Yeah, technically, I mean.
Yeah.
So did you do anything fun?
Got a kid on the way.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
If you're not struck by Cupid's arrow... We need to talk.
Yeah, we did something very fun. We installed some carpet on some stairs.
Woo! That is so much... So awesome.
So romantic. Mm. Well, so here's what happened. It's related to the apartment project, and we had one more thing to do, and it was on the outside. And, you know, in Oregon, it rains during the winter, and so I was like, well, let's wait until it's a nice weekend and it's not raining. And in my head, I was thinking, like... April,
right.
May, and no, it turned out that this weekend was like short sleeve weather weekend, just wonderful and awesome. And so I went, well, I guess this is it. So we did it.
So Oregon forgot that it was a winter as well.
Yeah, reading your tweets, which I was surprised to see, by the way.
I know.
It sounded like California was pretty nice too.
That was ridiculous, man. I was in Santa Cruz yesterday. And it was like 78 degrees and sunny and just gorgeous. And seriously, it was the middle of summer. It was unbelievable.
Wow.
But,
that's crazy. But more importantly, you were tweeting about it.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know. I've been bashing on the Twitter for so long that I've started to think about it again. And all of a sudden I was like, oh, maybe I could tweet something real quick. And, you know. It was rough.
That's horrible.
I know.
It's funny.
I don't even know what to do with it. It's, you know, the nice part is it pushes it to the Facebook, and I get likes on Facebook. Nobody on Twitter even notices. But, yeah. Yeah,
I got a writer who I follow, and he was talking about white spaces. And this idea of when he sits down the right, like, he goes, there are obviously different platforms to do that on. And he talks about, like, Twitter. He's like, it's obviously very small, the amount that they will let you say, 140 characters,
right.
Obviously so. He talks about, like, Tumblr. It actually starts off with a small box and then will grow as you write. But he's like, but your first, initially, like, what you're shown is don't say a lot.
Right,
you know,
right.
You know, it's flexible. It's like, whereas you pick something else like Medium, it's like, it's just a huge white canvas, which could be intimidating. And so I'm kind of like, yeah, a little picky, maybe. Or it's one of those where, like, if you kind of know what you want to say before you say it, that will determine which platform you go to. But
that makes sense to me. I mean,
he's like, I don't know. Sometimes I start out and I want to say like 500 words and it turns out to be 5,000. So it's tough.
Yeah.
I don't have that problem, so I guess we're good.
Yeah. See, I do like the creative limitations of the tweet. That's something nice, having to craft a sentence in 140 characters or less. It's a challenge, and it's shortcuts by, you know, chopping off words
Yeah, you're breaking up there. Say that.
Texting. I like to do it. I'm legit. I use full sentence. You have to be creative because there is this physical limitation and of characters, you know? So it's like you can't just keep talking and talking and talking. It's good for the psyche. It's good to exercise that particular form of creativity, artificial limitations, as it were. I mean, why was the fourth what's it called, Indiana Jones so awful? It's because there were no limitations. They could do whatever they wanted.
And they did.
They could show something as stupid as a fridge being nuked or LaBeouf swinging with the monkeys. And
you're just jealous. Dumb. I understand.
Oh, you know, hey, you know, yeah, I guess.
It's fine.
Yeah, they're terrible, let's be honest. Let's not even pretend. But, you know what, James? We're not here this week to talk about love and beauty or movies. We're here.
Oh my gosh! I'm going to cut you off. I was in a I was teaching a class this morning, and we started talking about email, and I started going into it, and I was like, "Wait, what? This has nothing to do with the class." I'm sorry, but we're not here to talk about this. I was like, "Huh? Where have I heard that before?"
Nice.
Pretty funny.
I'm rubbing off on you. That's awesome. So yeah, but we're not here to talk about that stupid stuff. We're here to talk about, ironically, emails, and technology and the continuing corporate opera. By that we mean the soap opera of corporations, dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and of course the technology they're developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James got a short disclosure.
I'm thinking about how I want to say it, and I took too long to think about it. I work for HP. I guess I'll just read it. But I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
Nice. Cool. I am currently uninvested.
You got out, huh?
I sold my Facebook stock on Friday. And
was it up, down?
A little bit. It's up from where my initial... It's up for my up when I sold Apple, and far less than if I had hung on to Apple. So that stinks. But that's okay. It's the worst. It's, you know, I'm probably.
Do you know your next target?
No. I've been thinking about it, and I haven't made up my mind. I'll probably just jump in feet first on Monday. It's kind of point and buy, you know.
All right.
See where the investment whims take me.
Yeah. I hear Candy Crush is whoever, I can't remember the name of that company, but whoever does that, they're doing pretty good.
Are they really?
I think they're UK based though. I don't know if that's a limit for you.
I don't know. It's a stock exchange, the New York Stock Exchange specifically. So.
Yeah, I don't know. But, yeah, anyways.
Dude, I'm going to be totally honest with you right now, just in case I... Because my brain is... I don't know if you've noticed already, but I'm kind of like... My brain's not working at 100%. I ran 12 miles this morning and this afternoon, and it killed me. Like, it's like the 11-mile run was tough, but I didn't feel like completely worn out by it. Whereas this one, for whatever reason, man, that extra mile, that was rough. It was a rough
exercise. Oh, it's probably a little warmer than you're used to as well, right?
Yeah. There was a combination of ingredients, to be honest. I did have I did have Valentine's Day plans, and I ended up having a few beers, so I might have been a little dehydrated. I actually wasn't like hungover or anything, but you know, if you drink a couple of beers and you don't immediately replenish with water, you're a little bit dehydrated the next day. And then it's super warm out, and I ran 12 miles, and yes, it was rough, man. It was a rough day is all I'm saying.
Well, congrats on the 12 miles.
Thank you. The run was great, but yeah, whatever. So anyways, if you want to follow us throughout the week where we talk about this sort of stuff and brag about the beautiful weather and other funny stuff, you can follow us on the social media websites. One of them. It is Twitter for me, at Matthew D. Furlow. That's where I'm at. Check her out. Or you can go to my Instagram, which is NextWiggin4. Check that out.
I'm checking up on you right now.
Uh-oh.
Did you post anything this week?
I did not post anything this week. I was supposed to. I have to post a picture of that I took of me and my girlfriend in San Francisco or in Santa Cruz.
Hmm. Yeah, there you go. You're supposed to do that real time, just so you know. Just put that out there.
I agree. You're just gonna scoot over that one. I like how I've decided that I still want to go back to the show and opening. I changed my mind. I found something to talk about. but you're just gonna let that one slip by. Okay, fair enough.
Dude, we're on to the regular part of the game.
Fair enough.
We'll talk more about the old girlfriend, I'm sure.
The GF.
How long have you been dating her now?
Oh, I went on our first date like probably December 28th, I would guess. So it's like over a month and a half, you know. So I suppose it's still relatively early in the 29th, the courtship process. It's been 6 months, but or 6 weeks. Still, like we're calling each other boyfriend girlfriend. That's terrifying.
Dang, that's pretty big time.
It is.
Here, let me look something up real quick, just to verify this, if it's actually true. All right, I wasn't sure if it was your internet, but apparently it would be mine.
Yes, it is.
Matthew Furlough, you are my brother. That's how it distinguishes you. Let's see here. It doesn't say anything about you being in a relationship.
I don't do that childish Facebook thing anymore.
Okay. It's
cool for that school.
Well, what it really means is I can't click on her name and look her up.
Yeah,
I see. That's the bummer part.
Yeah.
It's all right.
I totally don't do that on purpose. It's cool. You know. I don't know. It's an interesting question about
rage against the social media. That's fair.
Michelle. Yeah. You know, it's an interesting question about the whole, the Facebook official thing, man. It's like, I'm kind of, I don't know. I don't necessarily want to do that. That seems controversial in some corners and not in others. So far, we seem to be okay with the fact that we're not doing the Facebook official thing. But I don't want to paste it on Facebook. I've had some bad experiences.
Yeah, and that's the interesting part about social media, you know, and is you are living your life publicly if you share all of that. And if it doesn't work out, that can be embarrassing or whatever. I get it. I understand. That's one of the new tricky landscapes, you know, of how it all works.
That's true.
That's fair. If you want to find out how about awesome my life is, because I only post positive things, you can visit me on jamesfurlough.com or at jamesfurlough. I think this week I wrote a blog post with all the apartment pictures, so you can check them out. This thing that I've been talking about.
Nice.
JamesFurlough.com. I think it says something like Final Apartment Pictures. Really creatively titled. but yeah, it's good. It's exciting.
Descriptive is more important than creative sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes.
I was going to say, not normally, but sometimes. As BuzzFeed would point out, usually it's just overpromise and underdeliver is the name of the game if you want to win.
Yeah. One place where we will not overpromise and underdeliver, I'm going to do this for you, is furloughbros.com. That is where you can see all the links from today's story and all the links from the previous stories. You can also listen to the show. You can also go to furloughbros.com/store. And visit the place where you can buy cool Furlough Bros swag.
Nice.
It's always for sale. Always just for you, our fans. We buy stuff there, so you should too.
It's true. Es la verdad, as they say in España.
All right, man. I got great news.
Say you're first.
I have fantastic news.
Yes. Do you have four fantastic news?
What?
Do you have...
It's related. It's related.
There we go.
It is related to that. Sorry, I'm a little slow.
That's all right.
I think I'm on the precipice of getting, I don't even want to say it, of not being perfectly healthy. I can feel it. And the first thing that goes is my hearing, which is annoying.
Nah. Well, you're going to be, this is going to be a great show. You can't hear me and I can't think straight. We're not really. I'm just super stoked for what we got going on.
One of those shows. Yeah, maybe we should start plugging next week. We're actually gonna try an experimental show. It will be totally different than anything you've heard before. It'll be interesting. Mostly because Matthew's traveling.
Yeah. I'm excited
and I've
been
wanting to do
out.
This for a while.
Yeah, I'm excited to find out what it'll be.
Yeah. But this week, we have exciting news. It turns out that I was pretty much the only one who liked the second Spider-Man movie.
Yes.
I
liked
it.
It's
a shame, but...
I definitely liked it. I don't know if it was the best, but that's because Tobey McGee and Dr. Octopus, I think that was the best.
That was a very good movie. I would definitely agree with that. There seemed to be... Yeah, I'm not going to go into that. Anyways, so as a result of me being one of the only people who liked it, that's not true. They made like $709 million worldwide.
That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. The problem is they were hoping for something with 9 digits, not just 8 digits.
Yeah.
In the total, which you're like... Okay, fine. That's okay. Fine. I get it, right? It's an ROI thing, and it didn't hit the ROI number that they were looking for because of how much money they invested in, and therefore they have to go back and rethink these things. Which I get it. I don't like it, but I get it.
Right.
Anyways, I like this where they were like apparently. Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, it also came out the same year. They did $774 million.
Whoa.
They beat them. Like, whatever. Anyways, as a result of this apparent dismal failure, something beautiful is going to emerge of this. Yes. So Sony was like, okay. You know, they were getting ready to do, you know, they were going to do another movie. In I think like next year because it was part of their contract was like they got to do a movie every other year or something like that, and since it did so poorly they were like, okay, we're going to move the next Spider-Man 3 out to 2018.
So let's be clear, and the reason they had to do a movie every other year or whatever it was is because this was a contractual
that was
thing
part
with
of the,
Marvel, right?
Yes. In order for them to have the rights, they had to use them.
Right.
And so there was a specified amount of time. And so, and for the record, again, I loved it because it was a perfect setup for, you know, Peter Parker to move on with his life and, you know, become the regular superhero. It was kind of like they took two movies to kind of start the beginning of Spider-Man, and now he could fall in love with Mary Jane, keep his secret identity a secret, blah, blah, blah. We can move down and have awesome adventures. But they decided that they weren't ready to just move straight on to that, and so they were like, well, we're going to move it back to 2018. I'm like, okay, that's fine. And then instead what they were going to release in 2016 was the Sinister Six. Sinister Six. And then they were going to do another movie, which was going to be a spin-off film, apparently, of the Spidey foe Venom. Okay. And then they had too much to drink, and were starting to throw around the idea of having like some female superheroes, including one around Aunt May.
Okay.
Yeah.
We seem to have gotten off the rails here.
Yeah, yeah. At first, you're like, okay, this is I'm interested.
Yeah, I've always thought they gave Venom too little screen time, so I would have been a fan of a long arc Venom development thing. That would have been cool. And the Sinister Six are, you know, they're a big deal too. They've got their own books. That makes sense. Aunt May is a superhero. Seems a little unprecedented.
But, you know, whatever. So, turns out that it was the last straw for a lot of people. And so now, here's what's super exciting. Marvel has stepped in and said, we would like to help.
Yes.
I don't know how to pronounce his name. I always think Fergie every time I read it, and I know that's not right.
Let's go for it, man.
He's the guy who has helped produce the last 10 Marvel movies, which have all been blockbuster hits. You may have heard some of them, like Iron Man, Captain America, Thor, Incredible Hulk. Those kind of guys. And Avengers, I guess. And so Marvel has...
The Avengers, I guess. Yeah, that one I suppose you could include in their massive blockbuster hits.
Yeah, so Marvel now has created a new partnership with Sony where Marvel will be absolutely critical and central in coming up with the new storylines to launch the next Spider-Man thing.
That is important.
And ways to incorporate him into future Avenger movies.
Woo!
Perhaps even sooner, like Captain America Civil War, where he goes up against Iron Man. In the comics, Spider-Man actually plays a key role in that entire thing.
Say, Spider-Man is one of your core Avengers. He's a...
Yes.
And so he's like... He, historically, it's been a big deviation for him not being there. And actually, basically what they did was the Black Widow character, Black Widow is her own character, but the role she plays has kind of been... Almost from what I've been, I've read and stuff. I don't know if I can actually say this myself, but she's kind of like, she was the Spider-Man replacement. They bumped her up for two reasons. Number one, she's a chick, and female empowerment, whatnot. You know, this is good, I guess. But they allowed it, but it also filled the space of the fourth, a fifth Avenger. But it's pretty exciting because, I mean, like, you know, there are supposed to be, four wicked smart scientists involved in, the Avengers. There's, Bruce Banner, my favorite engineer.
You got this. Oh, man, is that me or you? I cannot tell. I'm going to get rid of my...
Man, and can you hear me now?
Okay, now I think I'm good. Go ahead, try again.
Yeah, so Peter Parker's, you know, the other was another critical one of the three, but then Ant-Man is the fourth one. And interestingly, Ant-Man is actually supposed to be like, he's the one that makes the rest of them look stupid.
Yeah, that's what you were saying last week.
Yeah.
We'll see how that. How that works out. But yeah, super exciting, dude. It's gonna
that
be good.
Very exciting.
It's coming together.
I'm very
excited. I just gotta go talk to Fox. Actually, yeah. I'm okay with what's happening on with the X-Men universe right now. It's cool.
Yeah, and you know, the deal is, like, it's hard with that because, you know, Marvel is making do with they're basically come up with it's funny, they've basically come up with like these extra characters who happen to have the same names and powers as mutants, but they're not called X-Men mutants. And they skirt around the actual X-Men team. But the role that the mutants play in the universe is being filled. So it's not necessary. It's not like Spider-Man, man. But, you know, Spider-Man, man. It is a little bit hard to know that the Wolverine will never be part of the Avengers. But, hey, it happens. I get it.
I wouldn't say never.
That's a good point. So this is a slight deviation. So do you ever play with Nerf guns?
I did when I was a kid.
You did when you were a kid. Yeah. you don't play with them as an adult anymore?
You know, every once in a while there's a Nerf gun hanging out in a youth group or youth group building.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'll pick one up and I'll shoot a couple people, but that's about it.
Yeah. No, that's kind of how I've felt about it too. But there are others who are a little more, maybe aggressive is the right word. Adults who have done some, they've gotten into the whole Nerf thing in a bigger way and do these really cool,
way, huh?
Yeah, they do these really cool modifications on the guns and stuff. And I don't know if you've seen any of the Nerf commercials, but man, there are some wicked cool guns out there now, Nerf guns nowadays. Well, Nerf has realized that there is some popularity amongst their older crowd and there's a market there. So they have started to introduce they have introduced what they call the Zeus MXV 1200. For a mere $50, this beautiful beast can be yours. But it will shoot the foam Nerf balls, so not the traditional Nerf dart, but actual balls, and it will shoot them at 70 miles per hour, which is it's moving, man.
Did you say 70 miles per hour?
70.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not quite as brutal as a paintball or an airsoft gun,
which
but
that
is.
Bad.
Yeah, but that's moving. You'll feel that. You will feel that.
Yes, that's awesome. You'll break something.
I know. Like that's
you actually can, break a window with that.
With this. Oh yeah, I mean it's jeez, oh, it's yeah. I mean it's kind of brutal. And what's even cooler is they're definitely embracing the idea that as an adult toy, it's they want to give you some flexibility and whatnot involved in that. And so they're going to be selling these fish that allows you to change them to be, to be what you want, where you can, what is it? You can turn it into a close quarter shooter or a long range rifle. And there's even a stock that doubles as a backup gun. So there's all sorts of cool stuff that you can do with it to make it, fit your particular needs. But it's the first real foray into your more adultish fighting weapons for Nerf, and seems pretty cool.
You see, this is like, I have a couple ways I can go about this. Whoa. Did you hear that?
I
that
did.
It was loud, right?
It was quite loud.
Wow. Anyways, totally distracted me too. Anyways, how do I want to go about this?
I don't know.
This is something that, in economic theory, there are different ways to think about, what makes companies grow and stuff like that. And there was definitely a trend with the baby boomer generation that if you as a company follow that baby boomer generation, you'll be very, very successful.
Yeah.
And so like one of them, and a lot of the ones that did very well were ones who followed the baby boomers' kids. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So like an example is like Gerber was a company that really started out with the baby boomer generation and just kind of rode that wave, and are obviously very huge. There are countless examples of companies that they started out with the baby boomer generation. Now, what's interesting is, especially like if you go after the baby boomer kids, you and I essentially, and there was another big wave that followed as a result of that. Nerf being one of them. I think Legos is another one that was super successful. Who I would say really hit the ground running when you and I came along, right?
Right.
And then the trick has been, okay, we've got some kids, you're looking for growth. But then we had former kids who are now no longer kids. How do we tap into their, what they're doing? And so the other path that I was going to head down is like Legos figured this out a few years ago. If anything, Nerf's late to the game because you play games with guns. Because they came out with that adult line of like, they came out, not adult line, but more complicated Lego sets and or the more sophisticated, the white corporate desk type of stuff. Because they've realized that, you know what, we have all these people who were kids and love Legos, and they're adults, and you know what, they still love Legos, but they don't want the same Lego sets anymore.
Right.
And it's like Nerf has made the same realization where they've gone, you know, we had all these guys who they love Nerf, they just didn't want the old Nerf stuff. Now they want like adult Nerf stuff, which is which is pretty cool. And I'm trying to rack my brain for like, what was another thing that we played with that totally made sense? I think an example of a company who hasn't figured that out yet is Nintendo.
Yes.
And, you know, because we talk about them all the time, like, oh, we love them, they were great. And they never figured out the fact that us, you and me, we grew up.
Yeah.
And we still want to play video games, just not the same video games that we played as a kid.
Right.
We want different ones. And, you know, and Sony and Microsoft were very quick to say, hey, we recognize a need, we'll help you out with that. Awesome. Right. And we did, and we talked a lot about that a few weeks ago when you were talking about Sony and how they made that how they recognized that opportunity. And so that's cool that they're like, hey, you know what? We actually think there's an opportunity here. And I'm like, I'm racking my brain really, really hard trying to come up with like, what was another thing I played with as a kid that was super fun? And I, you know, I still have fond memories about it. And I'm having trouble coming up with it, which is annoying.
Come on, I feel like
there's one there. I'm remembering we were that family who we literally had like a chest. That doesn't sound quite like a box full of toys. And how big would you say that was? It was at least,
I don't know, 7 feet across. What, I was 6 feet? I don't really remember.
6 feet. I feel like it was like 6 feet across. Sounds really big. How wide is a piano? That's not six. That's like 5 feet, right?
Probably.
Maybe like 5 feet wide, and then it was probably a foot and a half deep and maybe a foot and a half tall, something like that. And it was just full of toys, and it never really closed except for every once in a while where we would be forced to go through and clean it out, and then it would close for about 2 weeks. And because, you know, of course, we would just get it to the point where it closed and call it good.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to, like, I know that Nerf toys were definitely a part of it. We had other, like,
Super action figure-y
type stuff. Yeah.
Super Soakers Super Soakers could be due for a makeover.
Super high powered. And that's totally true. Because you remember, we used to take the Super Soakers, and you'd take the container off, and you just put a hose straight onto it. And because of the pressure, it actually shot, like, 4 times as far. And was, you know, obviously never ran out of water, which was fantastic. The only problem was you were stuck to the hose distance, essentially.
Yeah.
And it's like, we were already, that's a lame, tiny modification, but you're like, yeah, that was clearly one that could have easily leveled up on what they could do with that. Yeah, that's fascinating. This idea of what was something that was fun in the childhood that you ended up dropping that, yeah, you still kind of liked it, and with a couple modifications, it would be, it would actually be super, super cool.
You say make it a little more dangerous, make it a little more aggressive, require adult level skill to manage it, and all of a sudden it becomes something that they can sell to a new generation. It's pretty, I know
for me, like, I enjoy SimCity and the simulation types of games.
Yeah.
And the more I learn about like EVE Online, it sounds like that's the answer of it. But something that actually is a more complicated economic type of game,
right?
Has a lot more interactions. And the more I learn about EVE Online, I'm like, I don't want to know. It sounds pretty awesome, but it's real money. And so I feel like that's that other, like, you know, where people are like, yeah, the markets are super dynamic. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, something like that. But yeah, that's interesting. That's cool that they've fun.
This is classic Nintendo, but I think a Pokemon upgrade is something that everybody's always talking about. Like, follow my inspiration. Make something that's, you know, update the graphics, make it a little more aggressive, a little bit bigger, but the same basic principle, and all of a sudden, you know, I feel like you could have an explosive new market for that.
Well, if you think about it, the drone idea you've had is a semi-extension of that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Right? I mean...
Yeah. Major adult extension of...
Yeah. So I totally agree with you. There's something there, and you know, if companies like Nintendo or Nerf or whoever, you know, don't fill that void, someone else will, because that's the wonderful thing about markets.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool, man.
Yeah, I like it. I was very excited about it. So, speaking of Nerf, so have you been listening to music? I have no transition here. Have you
say, all right, where's this one going?
It's funny. I've been doing that all weekend long, where it's like I'll decide to change topics, and so I'll either just say speaking of whatever we were talking of, and then completely change topics, or you will like be walking along. Oh, I totally forgot to. Where? Oh my gosh! I actually want to talk about this a little bit, but it's probably too late. But there is this skylight that it creates this like really artificial, or really not very artificial. It's very very natural artificial sunlight thing, and I had to do the transition where I was walking along and we were talking about like whatever, probably, you know, like relationships and foods and friends, and all of a sudden I saw a skylight and I remembered it, and I was like, speaking of skylights, that is so off topic, it's not even funny. Okay,
it really makes sense.
Basically,
that's cool.
I know, dude. You know,
skylights.
At least I recognize that I was off the rails. So Apple is going to be changing up its music service, and I've been compiling these articles over the last few weeks because it's never just been. I've never felt like there was enough to really talk about it, and it's finally popped into something that's a little bit bigger and more cohesive idea of what the future of Apple Music's going to be, it's. It's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool idea, I think. And I feel pretty confident about the predictions I'm going to make, that they're going to come true. So I'm going to give you the lowdown on what Apple is going to look like in the next couple of months / year.
You know, it's funny on this, just so everyone knows here, the title that Matthew wrote was Apple Records. And I was like, oh, yeah, he's going to talk about the record earnings and... You know, no, apparently not at all. That's cool.
No, it's a bit like different.
I think we beat that dead horse a couple times too. So
it's go ahead. True.
And I'll talk about it later.
Yeah. Basically, Apple's the question everybody's been had all along is what's Apple going to do with Beats?
Yeah.
And what does iTunes become? What does iTunes Radio become? What does Beats become? Where are they?
I ask that question every hour of every day.
Yes. And I think the answer is that yeah, Apple, by the way. That's good. thank you for pretending.
You know, it's funny. I've had a few times this last week where it's even like the last 3 days where I've actually like, I've said something and then I've had to like, that was a joke, just so you know. it's too dry for me. That's like, okay.
That's funny.
All right.
So Apple is, they're getting into this. So that's the question. Jeez, you totally threw me off. The answer is, and this is, I think is interesting because I feel like anybody looking from the outside gets the same feeling, which is nobody really knows what the future of Apple Music's stuff is. There's still a little bit of, it's a little bit nebulous from the outside because
I was really hoping you were going to say nebular. Nebular. It just sound like that'd be a good word.
Right? But it sounds like the answer for why it's, you know, why nobody really knows what's going to be going on from the outside is because nobody on the inside really knows.
You know, that's one way to keep a secret.
Exactly. It's just
everyone. No one knows. No one.
Exactly.
Not even me. And I'm in charge of it.
The best secret ever. But there are a few things that it sounds like are pretty definitively true about what's going to be happening. Number one, Apple's going to charge. They're going to charge a monthly subscription fee, like Spotify. I'm practicing my English accent, since I have to fly there tomorrow. You know, pretty much everybody's premium service, whether it's Spotify or Pandora or iTunes Radio, they charge money and. Yes, in general, Apple's is by far the cheapest because you're getting rid of ads for $20 a year, and it brings the total cost of
is it only $20 a year
for iTunes Match? Yeah, it comes with radio free or ad free radio.
That's incredible.
I know. I've never heard an Apple Radio ad because I've been using iTunes Match, so...
They're not bad, though, for ads, but I would still do without them.
That's good to hear, I guess. It's good to not hear, too. But so, yeah, they...
That's good.
But yeah, so originally they had wanted to get the cost down to $5 monthly price point for their holistic service that it will include Beats, iTunes Radio, and ad-free iTunes Radio. But the record labels were not cool with that. They want something a little more expensive. They want more money. And all they really have to do is undercut Spotify and Google Play Music in order to really get a huge advantage there. And so they're talking $7.99 per month. You know, $2 a month cut is pretty nice. It's $24 a year, so you get to save that. That's a nice meal right there. Go spend that on your honey. Well, I mean, just like one meal, like not for.
Gotcha. Yes. Okay. We're good.
That
is a nice single person meal. I'm with you.
It is. So that's kind of where the price point is that everybody's talking about. $8 a month. Sounds pretty reasonable as opposed to 10. And
I thought it was $7.99.
Sorry.
No, jeez. I'm kidding.
Yeah. Thanks. So that sounds kind of cool, you know, pretty affordable. And Beats is, I don't know if you've ever used Beats, but it's just not Pandora, it's Spotify. It's the same principle.
Well, I thought it was curated lists instead of made by yourself. Or can you also make them yourself?
You can totally make them yourself.
Okay. I've never used it, but I always listen to all the interviews. It was all about, oh, there's these curated lists that are so well done. I love it. It's magic.
I think I was able to pick individual songs. So I think,
All right.
I believe so. I don't know. Maybe I only used it for like 2 weeks. I might be completely off base. I don't think I am, but anyways, so they're talking about packaging it all together as like a holistic app, right? So it's just be iTunes Music or something like that. Apple Music.
Which is a good idea.
Yeah, and so they'd get rid of some of the Beats branding, they'd get rid of some of the individual branding, and it would become this coherent platform. Now that's where most of the confusion comes in, is what does that mean by a coherent platform? Who's in charge of what? What's prioritized over what? And it sounds like Apple itself isn't like 1,000% sure of what that actually looks like and what the future of the platform is.
Which also means we're not going to see anything anytime soon then, right?
Oh, yeah, except they're talking like they keep rumoring that it's going to be launching this year and might even come before iOS 9, seems aggressive, but you know, we'll see. I think what you're going to see is this continuous evolution of it all. And I think you're not going to see the holistic platform. But one of the big deals about this, and I thought this was really interesting, is that almost certainly whatever this final big giant app is going to be not just available on your OS X and iOS, but it will also be available on Android with a natively built Android app.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about Windows?
Nobody uses Windows anymore, it turns out.
I've got a new website I'm starting up, new online business, I should say. Mm-hmm. That sounds more official. And I was making some favicons today, and they have gotten significantly more complicated since the last couple years that I made one.
What do you mean?
Like prior to 2007. You would make a single 32 by 32 pixel icon, save it as a .ico, or have a website, convert it from like a PNG or JPEG to an ICO.
Right.
And then you would put that into your root folder, and you'd call it good.
Yeah. It would just go and grab it.
Yeah, exactly. And I gotta pull this up so that I can make sure to articulate this fully correctly. And then when Apple came along, they decided that the standard favicon to save, websites on your phone wasn't good enough.
Never is.
And so they created the Apple Touch icon protocol.
Okay.
Okay. And
as what happens, Android decided that they had one way to do it, and then they all started to come out with different resolution screens.
Right.
Okay? So now So it used to just be you did Apple Touch icon .png, put that into your root folder, have your favicon there, and you'd be good to go. Okay. Now, just for the Apple, you need, 57 pixels, 60, 72, 76, 114, 120, 144, 152, and 180. How many was that? I already lost count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 different versions of your little Apple Touch icon to make sure that it picks the right non-pixelated version for whatever Apple product you, someone may choose to put your website's
save it on the home screen.
Picture. Straight on home screen. Android for Chrome is up to, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So not as bad.
Okay.
And, I forgot. Apple Touch has the standard Apple Touch icon and the Apple Touch icon pre-composed, which I don't know what that means, but that's cool. Even for the favicon, for different computer screens now, there's, aside from the default one, there's three other sizes. And here's the best part. Microsoft Tile. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of those as well. So, it's this entire, and then you have to insert code into your headers to make it all work. I'm just it just hurts my head. I'm for a stupid icon thing, which is not stupid because it's, the first thing people see and that will entice them to click on it. So I get, it's really important. But at the same time, I'm oh my gosh, I can't believe, it has not gotten easier. It's gotten more complicated. And so, all that to say, I noticed you left off a certain platform from that list of places where Apple's new app will be available.
Yeah, and that's I think that's very interesting as well. That clearly, I do wonder about that question because clearly I think putting it on the Windows phone specifically doesn't necessarily make sense. But part of it, I would imagine, is Apple is asking the question of what is the future of Microsoft's platform look like. There are a couple of new operating systems come out that are supposed to be integrated in ways that the other ones weren't. They're obviously going to keep up with iTunes for Windows. Now, if they put Beats into iTunes for Windows and all of their all of their apps are scalable from a full blown device to a phone, does that mean it just naturally gets iTunes Music? I don't know. It's an interesting, this is so not, it's funny because it feels kind of weird for them to say, oh, we're going to put it on Android because they're so protective of their little ecosystem, except for the fact that that iTunes has been on, Windows forever. I think part of the recognition is the fact that they don't have to seed the music market, even though they obviously, from a controlling huge amounts of profits from that, they don't have to give that up just because they decided to not possess market share in the phone area. And similarly to what they did for iTunes itself. It's a good service. It's a cross-platform service, so why not have it work? I think it's a good move. I feel like most people have been kind of waiting for it to happen for a while.
I'm sorry. I can't take it that many ways at once.
Wow.
Siri responding to you.
Siri, go away.
No, don't say her. Don't say her name.
Yeah, that's the point.
Oh, that's funny. I think it's also, Android's huge, and it's not a bad platform, and I think that's cool that they're kind of recognizing that and saying, there are people out there, they are smart, capable individuals, they happen to also like music. I'm sure deep down inside they've also convinced them that, we're going to expose them to how awesome Apple is, and maybe they'll check us out next time for even better integration. I'm sure they've had those conversations.
Yeah.
But Android isn't going anywhere. They know it, and to totally snub those people, that doesn't make sense. And there are a lot of Android users who use Macs. And, so there's there's something to say for selectively choosing which platforms you besides your own that you also want to develop for.
Right.
And for something like music, that totally makes sense. I would argue that it would make sense for them to develop for iWork, at least a viewing option for Android.
Well, I mean, iWork on the cloud is a Chrome-first web application, and it is now free for anybody with an iTunes account. You don't actually have to have – I don't even remember what it was before. I think you had to have, like, an iPhone in order to use iWork's beta, but now you can. Anybody can use iWork's beta and their cloud platform on any operating system. Yeah, so it's.
But I just wouldn't be surprised if they actually start to make the native apps either.
Yeah.
I for viewing purposes only.
Yeah.
I would never see them. I don't know. Maybe that's asking a bit, but that's cool, man. That makes sense.
It definitely, yeah, and like, you know, we've said it before on this show, I've said it before. But the idea that music is great for selling everything but music, and so I think there's definitely something strong in Apple's, you know, playbook to sell you a complete music platform and, like you said, draw people over to the rest of the Apple ecosystem. It's actually less likely to drive people away than draw people in.
I would agree.
So, yeah, I like it. But, you know, people didn't stop talking there, although that seems clearly true and interesting. There was this new kind of new idea that sort of started kicking around, and it was the question of an Apple Records. And not the guys that made the Beatles, but just what if Apple became a record company? You know, and basically what the argument is that what if they pull a Netflix? So they're clearly, they've got Beats, they've got they've got a number of different streaming options. They've got a number of different on-demand options. They have the ability to buy music. So when you're trying to sell these services, one of the great things to do is to do exclusives. One of the ways to do that is to partner with a record company and pay up the nose so that you can publish your stuff exclusively on that platform and then and hold on to that for some time. And Netflix has done that over the years where they'll have exclusive content that other platforms don't have from other studios. And everybody's gotten to that game, Hulu and everything. But I think a lot of people end up doing what I did, which is, well, I'm not going to sign up for Hulu because it'll get on the Netflix eventually. I'll just wait till it's out on Netflix and then I'll watch it. But when you start talking about these like actual platform specific Netflix shows, Amazon shows, Hulu shows, all of a sudden, you know, it becomes more compelling to actually set up to get an account because you know it will never leave that platform and this exclusive content. So the rumor bug is part of the reason why they brought Jimmy Iovine onto their label, into the company, was because he could negotiate. Jimmy Iovine is a producer, record guy. This is what he's good at, is getting artists and bringing them in and having them work specifically and do basically just that. And it would be a really smart move and almost inevitable that Apple will get into the business of producing at least select artists to create exclusive content.
Slippery slope, man.
Why do you say that?
I don't know. Maybe it's okay because it's worked out okay for Netflix, but you know, you could definitely see a backlash of other, I already forgot what they're called now. They're not producers, of other record labels, you know, where they're just like, oh, okay, well, if now you're competing, we're going to pull our music from you and we'll all go to Spotify and Pandora or whatever. I don't know.
Well, I was going to say, but if it's just content, I mean, you know, content is content. And as long as because what Apple's going to do, I think what their strategy will do is, you know, probably not T Swift or Beyonce, one of those level artists that are, you know, gigantic, but up and coming artists, or, you know, I could see them team up with somebody like Macklemore, somebody who's already made a name for themselves. Actually, Macklemore probably not, because he's all about being an independent artist, but somebody in that vein, somebody who's had one hit album ready to come out with a second one, you bring them on, you do the whole thing, you basically finance it all. And then somebody like me who goes, well, I want to listen to this album. I can't listen on YouTube. I can't listen to it on, on any of Google services, any of, you know, my Spotify services. So I'll sign up for Apple Music and for a month.
Yeah, and I guess as long as you can listen to it on any device, you know, like, yeah, we've got an iTunes app on all the different devices.
Exactly. And
I can see that. That's fair.
And then all of a sudden...
That's interesting.
And then all of a sudden the platform's really expanding, and the cool part is once you've got the platform, then you can listen to, you know, whoever you want on that platform. And so you're not really... You know, I could see... I would guess that it would actually would really help Apple and prevent, you know, as opposed to drawing people, you know...
What I could see Apple do is they could be... I'm going to say not greedy with the royalties that they pay artists, which is going to put a ton of pressure on the other labels. And I don't know, this could be very interesting.
Well, and it's
very
interesting. I would say it would be to their advantage to only have a couple of gigantic artists, because, you know, really have it be an incredibly exclusive label where they don't want to become, you know, Netflix doesn't want to become a network TV and only have networks content. They want to have everything. So they'll just have enough shows to get people on board. I get the feeling that Amazon wants to become a giant network TV show, but, but, you know, for Netflix, they get exactly what they need by having a couple of really huge hit TV shows that are enough to bring people into their Netflix account and do stuff to people like Timmy, who every couple of months cancels his Netflix account, and then they come out with another season of House of Cards. He's like, oh, I gotta get it, you know, sign back up. This brings people back into the fold.
That's funny.
Yeah, so it's, you know, I could see Apple doing that sort of thing and really working to their advantage while leveraging all the other music. But to really get the point across on this whole thing is, are you familiar with Zane Lowe?
No, not at all.
Yeah, me neither. But he's this guy. He's the BBC Radio 1 DJ, and he's been with the BBC on Radio 1 for 11 years. And he's the 41-year-old New Zealander who's had a knack for promoting emergent talent on the airwaves, including the Arctic Monkeys, who are one of my favorites, Adele and Ed Sheeran. Will present his final show on the BBC on March 5th, and then will move to America to take up his position at Apple. Basically, what this is it sounds like it's kind of in the same ballpark of what they brought Mr. Dre and, because he doesn't have a doctorate, and Jimmy Iovine on to board with, which was to, you know, bring in artists, bring in and promote up-and-coming artists. And part of this holistic, you know, goal to make it a huge service where they're not just, you know, they're not going to, I think at this point to me, it seems really clear that Apple's goal is to not just rely on really convenient music. That was the huge advantage of iTunes originally, right? We're going to make the process of getting music onto, you know, ton of music onto a digital device seamless. We're going to make digital music stores seamless. We're going to make it so easy to get whatever music you want that you'll buy our service. Well, now everybody's music is super easy, like everything out there. So just being, you know, at this point, it's hard, even if you could squeeze out the last 1% of convenience, which I don't even know how that would be possible, it wouldn't be enough to bring people away from Spotify, you know. So now they really have to go, if they're going to take on Spotify, if they're going to prevent Spotify from taking more and more of their business, they have to come up with a really huge, you know, they have to come up with a service that has the same, you know, footprint. B, they have to promote it like crazy. And C, they have to come up with music that you can't get anywhere else. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, the more you think about it, the more I'm sure that Taylor Swift says it herself. We make so much money off of iTunes that we didn't want people listening to it on Spotify, which is why 1984 got, or 1989, whatever that album was, got pulled from Spotify. before it ever really got to take off. It's because she wanted to make money through iTunes, and I'm sure, you know, Apple was thrilled with that sort of thing. But if you put together a whole fleet of producers and talent finders, and all of a sudden you can really push a service that has exclusive titles and make it huge. It seems like a good, a pretty awesome.
Seems like a fantastic strategy.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you execute on it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it goes back to the nerve-wracking part of it is that they still haven't figured, doesn't seem that they still haven't figured out what exactly the service looks like. I mean, that feels like you got to get that back down pretty early on, you know, they're, and what's frustrating is it's like, yeah, I feel like you could, you know, if you just bring all three of them together, just, you know, sit your foot down on what the particular, you know, branding needs to be and then move forward and just put all three of them under the same roof. But they're also terrified of, you know, losing, you know, I don't know. It's so tough. It's so tough because they don't want to give up the music sales. But they also realize that they're going to get left below. It's a classic innovator's dilemma. They're still making money off of iTunes, just selling music, and they don't want to completely give that up by replacing it with Beats. And so figuring out how to sort of make that transition so they don't do that is difficult, it would appear.
Yeah. I have it figured out.
Probably.
Or we'll laugh at them as they fail trying. One of the two.
Yeah.
Either way, good for us.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Cool. Very cool. All right, this next story is an interesting one. It's a Bitcoin story about MyCoin. Okay. They are they're a Hong Kong company. And I find Ponzi schemes to be fascinating. And if I ever had the opportunity to do one, it would be hard to say no.
Right.
But this company, MyCoin, they've disappeared with about $387 million worth of Bitcoins from people.
What?
Which is actually a significant chunk of money since the market cap for Bitcoins is only about like $3 billion.
What? Okay. Say that one more time.
All right. So, MyCoin, which is a Hong Kong company, has shut their doors. They said, we're no longer in business.
Right.
But at the time that they shut their doors, they had about $387 million worth of investor funds.
Okay.
And they did not give it back.
That would be frustrating if you were an investor.
Yes. Yes. It would be. And they took it from about 3,000 clients. So we can do some quick division and say either there was one guy with a whole lot of money that he lost or a bunch of people with a whole lot of money that they lost. And yeah, so it turns out that there were some rumors that they were doing some weird things that they were not actually a Bitcoin operation. So, you know, just a quick little recap here. The way that a Bitcoin mining business is you literally have servers that are solving for Bitcoins. And
right.
You get enough of them and you go fast enough, you can earn Bitcoins. And so people put money into those server farms and saying, we're investing in this business so that they can mine really fast and get Bitcoins for us. Because we think the Bitcoin market's going to go up. Something like
right.
That. That makes sense. Yeah. And so that was what they put together and they started collecting people's money and were having great rates of return. And so they were getting more people involved. So, it turns out might've been a little bit of a Ponzi scheme.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Which, like I said, I think it's a brilliant business idea. I'm sure it was a guy named Ponzi who came up with it originally.
Right.
It's so brilliant where it's like I would, it's for the record, it is highly illegal. So I will not do it, but, and I don't know the exact genesis of it. I'm sure just look it up on Wikipedia. They'll tell you about it. But the basic premise is you don't actually make a product or service or an investment. Maybe you say, hey, we're selling these stock investments.
something like that, right?
Right.
And where you can buy shares of Furlough Bro Inc. And we convince people that the shares are, you know, they're only a dollar today, but they are like guaranteed to go up to like $10 tomorrow. Okay. And so what you'll do is you kind of kickstart a little bit where you get, you find like 100 people who are willing to give you $1 per shares of Furlough Bro Inc. Right. And now you got $100. And what you do is you go out to say like 5 of them and you go, oh man, it totally popped just like we thought it would. You got your $10, you know?
Nice.
And so, yeah. And so you give back the $50 for the other ones. You say, don't worry, had a little lull, but it's going to happen. You know, it's going to be great. And so for those people at the $10, you're like, you know, just keep writing it out. You know, it's going to go even higher. Trust me, you know, just give it some time.
Right.
And then what'll happen is they're like, oh yeah, yeah, I'm totally into it. It's going to be great. And so you keep their money. And at the same time, you're like, dude, go tell everyone about this, you know, who's, you know, what we're doing and how awesome it was. So like for those 5 people who, you know, who did really well, they give you some more referrals and stuff. And so you go to like to their friends. And so maybe, you know, they give you 10 names for each of them each. And so you are now collecting, you know, you've got like 50 more people that you bring into the pot. You select like another random 5 essentially and go, oh my gosh, you guys just made a ton of money. You know, it went up to $10. It finally did it. And they're like, all right, yeah, awesome. And so essentially what you're doing is you're not actually selling a stock. It's a shell game, right?
Right.
and so you're slowly returning money to some people, but not everybody. And if you can play it right, you don't actually have to return it to them, you know, because it's like, oh, it's all on paper. You just double down. And you go back to that first group and go, oh man, sorry, it went down to $5. But don't worry, it's going to be back up. You know, just stick with it. You'll get back to your $10. And so they do. And so, and eventually some people, they'll actually be like, all right, you know, it's $5. I'm ready to pull my money. And you go, okay, yeah, no problem. For some people, you give them their money back. No big deal. For others, you tell them, well, okay, it's going to take a little bit of processing to get it through. You're going to have to jump through all these hoops and do whatever. And so the basic premise is your goal, which is like for any business, I get it, but is to be taking in more money than you have to give back / return.
Right.
As long as you can keep that delta going, you're good. And the trick in a Ponzi scheme is to make enough people happy that the people who you are cheating out of their money are not quite a big enough majority to complain very loudly. And so there was the Madoff one was a famous one that actually recently happened. And what they did was they recruited a whole bunch of celebrities for these investments.
Right.
And then through the celebrity endorsements got millions of people signed up for it. And then what they did is they gave the celebrities the returns,
you right. know, that
they
Huge had promised. Returns.
So the celebrities are like, oh yeah, totally classic. You know, it's totally legit. I made all this money. Check it out. Here's my check. And so the more people were like, oh yeah, I'm going to sign up. Check it out. This celebrity, he endorsed it and he showed me his check. It's good to go. And then they would lose their money. And,
right.
and then the ultimate thing is you keep it going. And I'm sure that there is a science to how long you keep it going for. But eventually you get to a point where you just go, and we're done, doors closed. And you just walk right. away with everybody's money. And because you can't sustain the mountain long enough.
Oh, don't tell Bernie Madoff that, but yeah.
Yeah, well, I like, you can, you know, depending on how creative you get and how many other people you can get in there to help you with it. But the fundamental thing is you're not actually making a product. You're not actually selling anything. You are literally just transferring funds around and trying to
get as many people to yourself so you can walk away with it all at the end.
Yeah, yeah, that's the trick. So turns out that this MyCoin did that.
That's awesome.
With $387 million worth of Bitcoin.
That is a lot of Bitcoins.
Well, yeah. Actually, they may not actually be Bitcoins. They may be real money because they weren't actually mining any Bitcoins.
I see. I guarantee it was real money. Like, yeah, that's crazy. That's craziness. That's awesome. Yeah. And it's just an obscure enough technology where I'm sure they got a lot of people who felt like, oh, yeah, I totally get it. It's great because, you know, the reason why they're making great returns is because they're not just investing in the money. They're investing in the infrastructure that allows them to make more money. It's like you really feel like not only do you make money as Bitcoin goes up and down, but the reason why your investments keep going up, even though Bitcoin's going down, is because, well, they're mining more Bitcoin. So that makes sense. You know, I could totally see how you would think that – this is some sort of a brilliant, like, they've broken the code of how to make money on Bitcoin, even when everybody else is losing, on the premise of, you know, nobody really actually understands Bitcoin.
that's
clever. That was clever. So this is in, you said this is in China, right?
Hong Kong.
Wait. Hong Kong. Well, that's lucky. They probably won't be executed. They were in mainland China. They may not be so fortunate.
Assuming you can find them, right? I mean, that's kind of how this happens, is they do it and, you know, there's no forwarding address. They're just gone. You know, that's they got true. On a private plane using, you know, cash. And so no one asks any questions and you'll never see them again. You know, and they've got all the money filtered to so many different accounts and, you know, own companies that own companies that own companies and trusts that own companies that you just... you know, you'll never find them. Bummer. Especially for that kind of money. That definitely was thought through.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Like I said, the whole concept of it is super fascinating.
Yeah.
Oh man, it'd be cool to have one, but, and I'm always trying to figure out like, how can I do this in Monopoly or something like that? Where, you know, you're just playing that kind of stuff.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I've had those similar ideas with like, you know, where it's like, it just seems so easy to separate a fool and his money. Like, why can't I be of the moral predisposition to allow myself to do that? It's like, I would love to be like, to be a psychic, to do like hand palm readings on the side. And like, I have like this great plan where it'd be like, you'd get really good at giving just hand massages. So it'd be like really relaxing and pleasurable. And the whole time you'd be giving like predictions and stuff. And you would just charge like $100, you know, an hour or whatever. And like a lot of times, they're, you know, people who like get into palm reading and like, you know, psychic stuff, they talk about how really and truly what they are, like, or they feel like they are, is when they're honest about it, is sort of like, you know, they're almost like a freelance psychologist. You know, they're sitting there comforting they're just comforting the people who need comfort and somebody to talk to. And so I was just like, oh man, I could make so much money. But then I actually think about it, I'm like, yeah, but then I'd have to be like blind to them, but I can totally read your future. And I don't feel like I could do that. And so I get your dilemma with the Ponzi scheme, because it sounds like a lie. It sounds like the sort of thing that you could get away with and would be really fun to figure out how to do. But at the same time, you know, it's terribly illegal, and Bernie Madoff has been going to spend a tremendous amount of time in jail. Some say the rest of his life as a result. So the downside isn't great.
They are illegal. Certain.
Yes. That Ponzi. Knew what he was talking about.
Oh, dude, brilliant. Brilliant idea. Or it's one of the, maybe not brilliant, it's not the right word. It's just, it's brilliant in its simplicity and how it works. You know? It's just like, oh, it's so easy.
Yeah.
I get it. It's just a math game. And how good are you at weaving a story?
Hey, exactly.
That's all that it is.
Yeah.
Pretty funny.
That's very cool.
Pretty funny. Anyways, yeah, just kind of a, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like I said, if I could figure out how to do it, I would. But I'll do it the old classic way. You know, I will provide value, and therefore the value that I add, I can sell stuff for more than what it costs me to create that value.
You know, companies who get good at that, people who get good at that, they make an unbelievable amount of money too. And
that, And you get to keep all of it.
Yeah, exactly. And you can spend it on stuff. And you don't have to live in a foreign country and hide your identity for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
It has certain perks.
Yeah. I'm going to skip ahead and do this anyways because it's a good lead into it. There is one guy who is creating a whole lot of value in the electric car space.
Yeah. Is it
Elon Musk?
Oh, okay.
And he believes that if he does it enough, again, that whole idea of providing value,
and being able to charge more to provide that value than it costs him to make it. He believes, this is crazy, that Tesla could be worth the same amount as Apple in the next decade.
I could see that.
Yeah, so the actual quote here, so essentially, you know, Apple, again, as we kind of referenced earlier today, are, you know, they are the first company to be worth $700 billion.
Which is a lot of money.
Yeah, that's obviously not adjusted for inflation. You know, if you did that, there's probably other companies, but we're going to let that go for now. Yeah, it is a whole lot of money. And it's taken them quite a number of years to get there. And Elon Musk had the audacity to say, oh yeah, I think we can get there in 10 years. Now, here's what he said in order to get there. He says, if you take this year's revenue, which was around $6 billion, if we're able to maintain a 30% growth rate for 10 years, which is potentially possible, and you add in your 10% profitability number, which is, I guess, how much they're making of their profit, and you have a 20 PE ratio, which I don't think that's going to be true because the average is more like 18 and Apple's sitting at 14 right now. So in theory, Apple's actually worth a whole lot more. And so I would not expect their PE ratio to stay the same.
But what does PE stand for again?
Physical price to earnings ratio.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah,
your price to earnings per share, I think, is what it is, what that really stands for. Yeah, so Apple, technically, relative to other stocks' PEs, are actually cheap, which mm-hmm. is kind of scary. So anyways, he said if they kept their PE ratio of 20, he says our market cap would be basically the same as Apple's is today. Yeah. He says that's going to require a bit of, you know, on the order of $700 billion. Obviously, getting there will require some significant CapEx, that's capital expenditures, such as battery factories, manufacturer plants, solar stations, that kind of stuff. But I am hopeful that we can do this without any significant dilution to the company. Maybe minor dilution, but nothing serious. And dilution, he's talking about, you know, breaking us up into different groups in order to make that happen.
Right.
But yeah, so there's an example of a guy who made a crazy statement. I will put money down right now that it doesn't happen. But, and I have multiple reasons for that. But that's an example of someone where if you create a lot of value and you're able to have it cost less to create that value than what you can sell it for,
you're not allowed to
$700 million.
You're not allowed to counter Tony Stark and not back that up. Why don't you think it'll happen?
Okay. Number one, there was also news that GM is going to release their 200-mile 30K electric Bolt
next year. That's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. It's obviously not as nice as Tesla, but it's definitely supposed to compete with the Model 3. And so I think that's the first one, is Tesla has a lot more competition than Apple does.
Yeah.
You know, if you think about the big phone makers, it's Apple and Android. And even with Android, okay, maybe Microsoft, I guess. But there are a lot more more car manufacturers. And I don't think they're sitting still while Tesla's doing their thing, as that GM example points out. It is also much more difficult to make a car than it is a phone. You know, Apple's able to outsource that to Foxconn. You can't really do that with the Tesla vehicles.
Yeah.
I get that you don't have to make as many because the price point is a lot higher. But you still got to build out that capability. And Apple didn't have to worry. The capability to make as many products as you need to for Apple was a lot smaller than it was for Tesla.
Yeah.
So I think that's a big piece of it. You know, there's also just other subtle things where it's like Apple's been working on this stuff for, 30 years?
Yeah.
You know, there's things in their ecosystem that exist that they've been working on for a while. We're going to talk about another article a little bit later on that's talking about the smart home. And one of the comments that the guy made, he's like, honestly, you're competing against a light switch that since Edison They've been engineering and optimizing and make work. He goes, honestly, it works pretty darn well. It's fast and reliable and really never breaks unless you physically do something to break it. And, right. And it has all these years of engineering and attention on it that, you know, that make it a hard thing to replace.
Yeah.
And
and honestly, it's funny, you know, I'll talk about it when we get there. I won't interrupt you.
Okay. All right. And so I think there's certain things that Apple had where they flipped the, you know, they did the next step and they got to, you know, they were building off of a legacy of other stuff, whereas Tesla doesn't quite have that yet. Again, the whole, I think the law of large numbers does play a role, and Apple sees it in their PE ratio.
Yeah.
You know, theirs has dropped significantly. I think Tesla's would do the same thing, just like Apple. And so that's just one of the ways that it works. Cars last a whole lot longer than phones do. And so they're going to have to go up against that very real, you know, limiting factor there. So I think there's just a bunch of things. I'm not saying that they can't reach that number. I'm not saying that at all. I just think to say he's going to do that in 10 years and, you know, with all of those assumptions, like, that's a little too perfect of math there, Alon. But fundamentally, I think they are doing something that's valuable. And so, it's good. So they'll continue to make money, which is, because it was the other one that they were talking about is he originally had said that he didn't think they'd be profitable until 2018.
Yeah.
And it turns out that they pulled it off a few years early. So he's feeling good about that. Feeling good about
that. Blam. So this is, I'm just going to jump in here because it, you know.
Yeah. I know. He's your boy.
I'm going to just say, so have you been following this Apple's making a car stuff at all?
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, it's I've had some more thoughts on this. I still think all that camera stuff that they were talking about the other week, I'm still super confident that's a Street View style thing that they're bringing in Apple Maps. Like, it just doesn't. I don't know. I don't really buy that they're doing something else. But it seems pretty clear. I guess people have been looking into it that Apple's building cars, and with the intention of, you know, either building a luxury car or an electric car or an automated driving car, like they're doing something, and they actually have like 1,000 engineers, like a lot of engineers working on this project. And I think what's really interesting is if you actually look back, I wish I had more time to try to find it, but there was this old video that Apple put out when they I think it was when they came out with the iPad, where they were talking about spitballing this. They were having this like spitball thing where they were sitting around coming up with ideas and just brainstorming what different things could we touch. And they talked amongst those, they talked about watches, phones, tablets, cars, and cars were something like cameras. And they actually threw cars out there as one of the ridiculous, like there wasn't anything we weren't willing to talk about. And what we settled on was actually the tablet. And it wasn't until Jobs actually saw the tablet that he went, okay, we need to turn this into a phone. But a car was thrown out there as one of the things that Apple could potentially get into. And it seems like they're actually building them and they're getting into
it. Well, I'd like to think that, in some regards, it's very similar to Google, maybe not as formalized, but you know, where when you've got as much money as they do and as much talent as you do, you've got to imagine where it's like, yeah, let's try all these research projects and let's just see what can we learn. And you know, maybe we'll make a car, maybe we won't, but maybe we'll learn something from it. Okay, big deal. We spent $2 million. You know, yeah. I mean, that's like, yeah, heck, we spent $1 billion, whatever.
We spent $100 million doing it. And it's funny. I sit there and I go, every time we talk about, you know, rumored Apple products, whether it's the Apple TV or the bigger iPhones or whatever, over the years, I've always mentioned the fact that Apple makes them. They don't just talk about it. They don't focus on a single device. They actually design. They have had multiple generations of large iPhones. and before they finally launch the 6 and the 6 Plus. And the reason they do that is because it's part of market testing. You actually build the you build a couple of demo units, say, does it work? And then you actually build the scale. You know, you do a small run to really flesh it out, to ask the question, what do we need to do to be able to manufacture these things? And then for, you know, whatever various reasons, they decide finally that, no, we're going to stick with this style phone. But every generation, they as they design a new phone, they tried out the bigger phone. Same with the Apple TV. They've built Apple TVs. I guarantee it. It's ridiculous to think that they wouldn't. And you know, an actual piece of glass that sits on a wall and super high resolution. Yeah. They've just decided for whatever reason, you know, it didn't pan out and they didn't go with it. But I would be very shocked, like you said, is just as a research project, why wouldn't you build cars? Because it's like right now they've got iTunes, you know, they've got a CarPlay, right? And they're getting into the car space, at least to some degree. Well, if you design an entire concept car, you learn so much about what it's like to design a car and what it goes into it. And if they're banking on the fact that that Elon Musk is right, in the future of cars is electric cars, well, then that's what you would build. Because the goal isn't to build the next great electric car. The goal is to figure out what the next great electric car is going to need before it's built. So that when that moment happens, when it comes out, they just kind of slip in there and they're like, oh yeah, totally, this would be cool. You know, what do you need to do with a car in order to have the doors unlock with an iPhone? Or an Apple Watch or whatever. You know, what are the security things that need to be implemented? What are the communication? What does it make sense? You build these cool demo research things, and then you move on. And, you know, a car takes a lot of people, it requires a tremendous amount of engineering to build a good one. So, I don't think you'll ever see a car sold by Apple. But I think they're obviously they want to move further into the car space. And this is the next big step, is for them to put together a team that figures out, like you said, and it's so similar to the Google X, not the Google X, but the Google Labs project with the automated driving cars from Google. The goal isn't to sell cars. The goal is to engineer the platform so that when people need it, you've got a product to sell them. And
right,
you know, and part of that is them building their own cars and building these tools as to learn.
It's one of those where they sit there and say, we've got the resources, we've got the time, we've got the interest. I'd be shocked if Google actually made a car, but you'll have cars that are running Google.
Exactly. Hey,
they're going to do what Amazon did with Android.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm going to let you do another story. I'll be back in a couple of seconds.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right. What was I going to talk about? Oh, all right. I'm kind of curious as to where you're headed, but that's all right. Okay, the first thing I wanted to talk about was this interesting story that said, "Forget everything you thought you knew about the homepage," by Matthew Ingram of GigaOM, which, by the way, I think GigaOM has a really good-looking website. Just want to put that out there. I think it's very well-designed. I've thought about copying their web design, but so far I've held off. But I'm not above stealing from them, because I think it looks good. Anyways, there was this person, Melody Kramer, who was thinking about, and I'll probably end up repeating all of this when Matthew gets back, but that's okay, who was thinking about the homepage and what makes a good homepage. You know, one of the things that that she noticed is that, at least for news sites, a lot of the homepages are the same. And and there are certain reasons for it, but you know, she was kind of like, "Can we do better?" was kind of her question. And so she did a blog post on Medium that was 64 ways to think about a news homepage, which is a lot of different ways. Hey there, welcome back.
Sorry about that.
No problem. We were just talking about homepages and designing them potentially.
Yeah.
And so there was a story on Medium that had 64 ways to talk about a news homepage, and or to design a news homepage. And the first 16 are all related to like classic ones that we all know and love, where you just have like a list of curated stories, you know, arranged by topic or something. Think New York Times. You might have an automated process for doing it, like Vox, perhaps. There are some that just have one story, you know, where just like click this. This is the one story you care about. One like Quartz, where they've got them arranged like an email newsletter. Pretty boring. You can have reverse chronological order, which is very similar to it. You could have geo target and localized material, you know, like NPR. You could figure out the last time that someone visited a site and adopt the news on that site for that particular person. An example might be the person who wrote this. Melody last visited the Washington Post on Thursday, and since then, the Washington Post has published three large investigated pieces that Melody should see because of her interest or because they cost the Washington Post a lot of money to produce and shouldn't spend the same amount of time on the homepage as a quick blog post. You know, you could show like person news. You know, here's what people are saying on Twitter or on Facebook about something. You could have curated news that try to help you make it through all of the fire hose. And it goes on and on and on. Reddit is a classic one where you let the community decide what should appear on the homepage. There's some that have you think about like timelines, or you know, they could be summaries, that kind of stuff. And so what was interesting is that she started with this like, okay, that's what a lot of them are, but do they have to be that way? Could we do better?
Probably.
You know? and, you know, which is kind of an interesting, which is an interesting thought experiment, right? To be like, huh, homepage. Yeah. Could it be better? That's an interesting question. So, again, I'm starting up this new online business, and it is, it's based around, teaching about landlording. And I was really interested in like a magazine style layout at first. But what I realized is that for that to really work, you have to have like 100 articles minimum. And
right.
Yet. And so I was like, oh, that would just look, I know. I'm hiring writers. So if you know anyone who knows about landlording and is interested in writing, I'm hiring. So, I will get there eventually, but at least for now. So again, here's kind of where the thought process went. I went, well, for now, I'll just do reverse chronological order, doing snippets of the stories, and you know, and that'll help fill it out. It's got a sidebar. You know what I mean? It's like it's your classic blog at this point, because of the dearth of content. Is that the right word, or did I reverse that? That
means not a lot,
right?
Okay. No. Dearth is a lot.
Dang it. The other word.
No, you're right. It's a scarcity. I'm sorry. You were right. I was wrong. Why would you listen to me, dude? You know what state I'm in right now.
I know. I knew that you would do what you just did to validate it.
So, I gotcha.
So anyways, because of the dearth of content, it just has a regular blog format. But what's happened is it has now grounded me on a design. And eventually, because I hope this, I will start to get visitors and stuff. If I ever decide to change it drastically, oh man, you know, the backlash is going to be huge. And so I see myself, it's like, man, I would like to try something new and different and novel and unique. But I'm also like, well, it just, for some of those unique ones, it really only works if you've got a lot of different content. And
right.
So I went with tried and true. And once you head down that path, you're not going to change it. So I think that's a lot of the reasons why homepages are what they are, is because you start with one thing and then you're not willing to make huge changes as a result of it. But nonetheless, this person came up with some pretty interesting ideas for them. And I would say like customization was a huge theme in what she chose. Like, for example, you might have a choose your own adventure kind of story.
All right.
Where you start out with like an overview. Okay, and she used Ebola as the base story. And it says, Ebola happened. Okay. Would you like to see charts and stats about it? Would you be interested in the history of Ebola? Would you want to read more about the current events or perhaps the people involved? And you'd go, okay, I'm interested in the people. Okay. And it starts to give an overview of the different people involved. Then you say, okay, what about key figures? Or here are some politicals who are interested in it. Or here's what experts have to say. And so you can kind of choose what you want. Or if you went down the current events, it just takes you to like the latest and greatest update. If you do like the history, maybe you're interested in seeing maps on what it is. You know, it's this kind of idea of you can go in depth on a story, but you kind of get to decide where do I want to go in depth on. Does that make sense?
Interesting. Yeah, kind that is cool, interesting.
Yeah, kind of a cool idea there. And so that was one. What was the... Oh, another way, and I don't see it on here, but that's cool. Another way that it might start you off with is you get to the homepage, and it asks you right away, like, so do you have, like, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, or an hour to kill? You know, and you're presented with four boxes. And you're like, oh, I only got 5 minutes. Cool. Headlines. That's it.
Nice.
You know, if you say, like, you got an hour, okay, here are some longer reads that you might find interesting. And so then you can click in and actually read them. And so, you know, or you're only presented with like four stories if you only have 5 minutes. And so you don't feel bad because you need to get to all of them. Like, these are the top four. If you have an hour, okay, we'll give them all to you. And you can choose. And so things like that where it actually asks you about it. There was one that I thought was very interesting where it was this idea of like... get me out of my own cacophony of news type stuff where every day that you go there, it's kind of random, but it's like, read the news as if you were living somewhere else. Yeah. So like you might go to the website and it's, here's the local news in Scandinavia today, or in, you know, here's what's happening in Rome, Italy, or wherever. Boston, it snowed today, you know, so you might get, you know, something like that. This idea of like, help me get outside of it, of my, you know, what I normally read and stuff.
That's definitely interesting. It's very cool.
You could have one that, it's news on the hour. It changes on an hourly basis.
Okay.
This was kind of weird, but it was like news that is categorized by awesomeness. Like, I kind of like it, but I also feel like that is just curated.
Right. Yeah.
One where it's a display of if you were to take the stories and they're, you display them like nodes that are interconnected. And so it's like, it's still a list, but visually you can see how they're all connected to each other.
Interesting.
Just kind of, yeah. I was like, oh, that's interesting. Where was another one? That was the time sensitive one. You might have one that, you know, has a headline and a summary, and then underneath it has a whole bunch of like related or supporting articles to it. So you kind of get that brief summary, but then you can dig a lot deeper if you wanted to. That could be kind of cool. There was a treasure map. Let's see, your day's news is randomized by country. Pretend you're... oh yeah, we just talked about that one. They were talking about some that try to make them gamified.
Yeah,
yes, where it's like, you've read 5 stories this week or something like that. Or you literally, like, you get to spin a wheel and it gives you a topic that you could check out. I don't know, that's kind of interesting. You could just have one that's kind of random. You know, here's a story randomly chosen. You will see this and potentially no one else will.
Yeah.
Which is very strange.
That is strange.
Yeah, but so some of them, like I said, they're kind of weird, but it's this idea in general of saying, oh, this one's interesting. Where it gives you a story and then it asks you, like, what did you learn? And so you actually, like, you have to type in an answer before you can go to the next story.
Weird.
Yeah, like forced participation, which is very strange.
That is really strange.
Yeah, I kind of, there's part of me that likes that. But it's this idea, again, of like saying, you know, does the homepage have to be what it is? Just because it used to be a list of stuff, do we have to keep it that way? Can we make it different, a little bit more interesting? I think the advent of apps helps a lot too.
Yeah, I definitely think there's room to innovate there, and I'm glad to see it because, you know, there clearly is, and like you said, I think that the hardest part about it is, it's like if you experiment and your content is great despite the despite your layout, you want to be able to change it, but there are some people who will complain about that. It's dangerous, but it's cool. It's definitely unique. I mean, I'll try it out.
Yeah. Well, or something. Yeah. Figure that out on your homepage.
For sure.
But yeah. Anyways, I thought that was cool.
It was awesome.
Do you own a Samsung television?
I don't.
Oh, well then, you are missing out on some added value provided by Samsung.
Added value. I love added value. Added value.
Yeah. Cause you know what's really annoying is when you're watching a movie and it just keeps going straight on. And so you never have an opportunity to like take a break and go to the bathroom.
Right. I do hate that.
Or look around the room. Yeah. It's just like this constant immersion. And
talk, action.
Yeah, that's it. It's just nonstop, really. And then only when it's completely done does it actually end.
Right.
You know, it's a very frustrating phenomenon that happens with movies. And so I feel the need again. Maybe it's just me. We're joking. But Samsung feels your plight.
Yeah.
And so
what are they doing for me?
Yeah. And for the record, they didn't mean to do it on purpose, but after about 20 to 30 minutes, it plays a Pepsi ad.
Nice.
There's no audio, but a crisp, clear ad.
during the middle of a movie.
Of a movie.
That you are not buying from or viewing from Samsung, correct?
Correct. Yeah, you might be...
Because if you're watching a movie on Hulu and you get an ad, even without audio, that wouldn't be too shocking.
Right. No, this would be like you're watching a movie on an app, say like a Plex app, I guess. I don't know what that is, but I'll believe it. Yeah, and it will show you, it'll just inject ads in the middle of the video. And this is right on the heels of, you know, people finding out that in the Samsung television's terms of service, it says do not disclose any private information near your television because it's listening to you.
Yeah.
And people are like, wait, what?
Yeah. Well, it's worse than listening to you. We're sending it to third parties without scrubbing it or anything first. Excuse me?
Yeah. And it was like, well, we're listening for keywords and stuff, but we're listening. And so this kind of happened all at the same time. But yeah, it kind of, oops. Apparently this wasn't supposed to happen, but I mean, clearly it was built in to the app for that idea. And someone accidentally flipped the switch. But yeah, Samsung has been showing ads on their televisions pretty bad. I think they figured out how to kill it. You know, and Samsung was obviously, which would make sense, like, oh my gosh, we had no idea.
Right, yeah.
Which, and I believe them. I can't believe that. I don't believe they're that dumb. Or I don't believe they're that malicious. Let me put it that way. And yeah, pretty funny stuff. Just like, oh, oops. Or bad guys interjecting ads on your movies.
Samsung's
the worst.
People
don't take it well. That's so weird.
Yeah.
That's my Samsung story.
I like it. So you got a couple of more, and then I got one more. Do you want to?
Oh, it is my week, huh?
Yeah, all right. Man.
Oh, so I want to give a quick update. I'm just going in order. I'm not caring about colors anymore. I do not have a Lockitron yet.
Wait, I didn't. So,
I do not have a Lockitron yet. That lock that automatically opens and closes your door.
Which would be cool if you had one.
The reason why, apparently, is not only did they have a huge amount of people who also thought the Lockitron was cool, but they were continuing, they did not have a highly scalable manufacturing technique. And so what they decided to do was put the original Lockitron on hold and develop a new one. The Bolt. And so that is what I will be getting someday.
What?
In the long future. It's the next generation. It's smaller, thinner, faster, more reliable.
Okay.
Better scale for manufacturing. Plus, I'm going to get this bridge at no extra charge, which apparently is what will allow me to connect to Wi-Fi and access my Lockitron from anywhere.
Okay, cool.
I don't know what that means. But yeah, it's... yeah, so just like Lockitron is like struggling over the, under the own weight of their success. And yeah, I fed the dog.
Okay.
Jesse was looking to know if I fed him. But yeah, so they're, they've been struggling underneath their own success. And so they decided, let's just redo the product. Let's have a red before we even get the first one out together.
Okay. That is, they are a heck of a company, man. Speaking you know, of fraud and Ponzi.
Yeah. yeah, yeah, they've got my money. They're sitting on it. That's fine. Yeah, it's kind of annoying.
I have a feeling that they are a classic company, where a classic Kickstarter hardware thing, where the goal was to actually get support so they could court investors, and they knew they wouldn't have enough money on through the first round of fundraising, and but they needed once. But they could leverage that into a full-on, you know, investment from a VC and then turn that into a bigger plan. And I wonder if they just failed to raise the money that they needed to raise when push came to shove. And it's one of those things where, at this point, they don't even care about giving you the Lockitron as long as it doesn't ruin their reputation. To them, for their biggest concern is trying to court VCs and money to actually pay for what they promised they'd give you, because they can't afford it based on how much you paid them.
Maybe. That's highly possible. I don't know. The thing for me that makes me concerned, though, is, like, they're spending, and this is the same concern I have with Pebble, is, like, they're spending all this time and energy focusing on the hardware and getting it out, that what are they going to do when HomeKit finally gets released? You know, I keep kind of like hoping that they're going to integrate with it. I'm like, man, are they going to have the bandwidth and the resources to make sure that that works? Gosh, I really hope so, because, boy, if it doesn't, that's going to be really lame. And I've got another story in a little bit that is also related to that. But yeah, I just want to give a little update. Still don't have my Lockitron.
That's a bummer, man.
It's, yeah. But hey, the new one looks pretty cool.
Yeah, well, you know, it did better. They're trying to, you know, if it didn't, you'd be in a real bad place.
The worst part is for people, they've already shipped some, right? Just not all of them. And so, like, yeah, for those of you who've already shipped it, we'll sell you anything you want 50% off. Like, oh, that would just infuriate me.
Oh, yeah.
Like, wait, what? I get the old one that's not so cool, and, oh, that would hurt.
That would be terrible.
Yeah. So, let me see here. All right, we're gonna change courses just a little bit here. There are multiple ways to. We're gonna talk about app development, specifically for the iPhone, and there are multiple ways to get your app to be uber popular. Okay. There are apparently two particular ways that you can do it. One of which is new. One of which you will probably never do, but is interesting. All on its own. Let's start with the more interesting one. I love Yahoo. It's a disturbing image. I wouldn't say it was disturbing. It's an image. But it's an image of a Chinese coworker with close to 100 iPhones in front of her, all sitting. They're kind of all, how do you want to say it? They're all on and like.
They're like mounted with it's like a piece of wood with hundreds of iPhones mounted to them, all on.
Yeah, yeah, we're just sitting on a shelf, and they're not iPhones. I believe that they are. They're iPhone 5S's or iPhone Touches, whatever. They're the cheap guys, and they literally apparently get paid to sit there and download apps. You know, like so, you develop an app. you pay this company about $65,000 per week, according to Cult of Magic, and they will, and you can see this girl is sitting with 100 iPhones. There's another board just across the way that's also got 100 iPhones, and they've just cut a ton of power cords going to them. And my guess is that they're not the only ones in this room. And their job is to literally download apps. And part of that is, you know, how do you get popular on the App Store? We don't know the magic algorithm for sure, but we're all pretty sure that it relates to app downloads. And so that is what they do. They download the apps, and apparently at some point in time, the phone will get restarted, and they will re-download it over and over and over again to help your app get to the top of the list.
Oh, man. I'm so glad I don't have that job.
That's what we. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's funny. I mean, I've done enough of like paying attention to how apps get popular. There is so much buying your fame that goes on. Like one of the big, I know one route is to actually pay like an advertising firm to get your app and then use it. And they go out and then pay popular people to use your app and tell their friends about it. So like if you have some sort of a new social networking app, they'll go to fraternities and sororities at different various big campuses, find the most popular ones, and then say, hey, you all should use this app, and then tell your friends about it, and they get paid based on that, which, you know, I realize is somewhat different, but is it really that different? Like, I don't know. It's crazy.
Yeah, no, it is crazy. The more legal way to do it would be to participate in a new partnership between Apple and Pinterest.
Yeah.
So Pinterest, I can't remember if we talked about this or not. I feel like we did. They had the new smart pins. Not really new. Did we talk about this? So
I don't think so.
Okay. So with Pinterest, there are pins, and then there are special pins. I don't know what they call them. But essentially, they're pins with extra info on them. So, for example, if you pin a recipe, they'll actually have the ingredient list and cook time listed in the pin detail. If it's a product pin, it will show you its price and availability. If it's an article pin, it'll actually give you the headline and the story description inside of it, which is kind of cool.
That is cool.
And now, if you visit Pinterest on your iPhone or iPad, you'll see another kind of pin, the app pin. So, let's say that you're putting together an inspiration board for your marathon training, and you see or use a fitness app that helped you reach your goals, and you want to pin that.
Yeah.
You can do my that. Yeah, like Runkeeper. And then what'll happen is when someone else sees it on Pinterest, they can literally tap that pin and install the app right from the Pinterest app.
That's interesting. That's cool.
Yeah, pretty cool, right? And yeah. It's an interesting way, because I know, again, one of the big complaints about the App Store is there's not a good filter and search and, you know, discovery process. And this is an interesting way of handling it, of saying, well, we'll let Pinterest do some of it. And, you know, I could see in the future Facebook does some of it, and Twitter and other social platforms curate their own way. And you know, and so that's how Apple kind of outsources it, which is kind of, I don't know if they would be into that, but it's an interesting idea.
It is a very interesting idea.
An interesting way to increase your downloads. That's totally legal.
Siri really thinks I'm talking to her tonight.
She's jealous. She can sense all the Apple conversations. I could download apps too, just so you know. I'm Siri.
I'm here for you. Yeah, that's cool. You know, it's definitely something that needs to be innovated on. Well, nice job, Pinterest. It's a very Pinteresting thing for you to do. Sorry. So speaking of cool new innovations, we've talked about this a couple of times, and there seems to be an update worth mentioning. So we've always wanted haptic feedback on our iPhones and iPads, right?
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
We want little buttons to
2 years.
Pop up and for them to work. Well, a company, it's called Form, P-H-O-R-M. They have created an iPad mini case that generates physical keys out of thin air. Which I think is actually technically incorrect, but well, no. This one is correct. It's like an air pump, and it pressurizes the different little bubbles.
Whoa!
But yeah, basically, it's the same stuff that we've been talking about forever. It pressurizes little buttons. Those buttons raise and lower as the keyboards come up, and so you can touch it, and it allows you to type better and faster. And they're actually going to be selling this product, though. They claim it's really thin, has long battery life, and they're, you know, these are mechanical keys, of course. They're essentially touch-capable ridges that suggest the location of the device's keyboard in portrait orientation and have a little bit of give on the finger press, but they provide a lot more presence than a flat display for typing and touch alone. And of course, they disappear completely when not in use. Essentially, thanks to Form's pricing, you're getting a major feature in addition to a standard scratch protector, along with a durable protective case without much cost over and above cases from premium accessory makers. So this is the end all be all. It's not it's not infinitely adjustable to whatever. It's designed for a specific orientation and a specific device. But you know, if that's what you're into, they're moving along, you know, and it's one of those things where I think you'll continue to see innovation in this space for a while until hopefully finally your sort of infinitely variable ones actually take off, and then all of a sudden one of these really cool screens just pop up. But it'll be interesting to see how well it performs and how well it sells. That's, I don't know, see if there is actually interest in it.
Yeah, I don't know how well it will sell. But I think device manufacturers are watching.
Yeah, definitely. Sure. They want to know.
I hope so, at least. Man, I hope so. All right, man, you ready for the final story?
Go for it.
All right. This is a story about the Wink Hub. So you should enjoy it because you have a competitor.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Wink is the affordable, simple way to create your smart home. We've talked about the commercial. That was absolutely amazing. We've talked about seeing them in Home Depot. I've actually talked to different Home Depot employees while sitting around waiting for them to order carpet for me or something, and they all bought it on that day when it was like $1 for the Wink Hub.
Nice.
And so yeah, and which I semi was regretting, but now that I'm learning more, I'm like, I don't know how much I'm regretting it or not. So this guy, Adam Clark Estates or Estes, it's probably Estes. He starts off with this little story here. A week ago, a couple friends and I were about to watch a surprisingly bad sci-fi movie in my crowded apartment. One of them asked if we could dim the lights and started to head to the switch. He goes, no, I've got it, I said, reaching into my pocket. He's reaching for his phone, said the friend. This was the moment I'd been waiting for. Time to show off my smart home. I'd spent the last 6 months, oh my gosh, making my home more intelligent with Wink components. That meant 6 months of programming light bulbs and installing sensors and adjusting shades and updating hubs. All my effort to connect my appliances added up to this one very public test. My friends didn't need to walk 10 feet to the light switch when I could manage everything with a couple taps. Nice. My friends would be so impressed. I'd talked up my pet project plenty, and now they could watch the future unfold before their eyes. I unlocked my phone. I found the right home screen. I opened the Wink app, I navigated to the light section, I toggled over to the set of light bulbs that I'd painstakingly grouped and labeled, I tapped living room, that was it, and the icon went from bright to dark. Okay, so that was like 6 taps. Then nothing happened.
Oh.
I tapped living room. The icon, not the lights, went from dark to bright. I tapped living room, and the icon went from bright to dark. The lights seemed brighter than ever. How many gadget bloggers does it take to turn off a light bulb? Said the friend, smirking. I thought that was supposed to be a smart home. So, he says, I threw my phone at him, got up, walked 10 feet to the switch. One tap, the lights were off.
Yeah.
That's his intro to a very long story and article where he talks about how he went and saw a demo of the Wink Hub and was able to convince them to give him a few $1,000s worth of Wink parts that he could try them out, all the way from the hub to the relay touchscreen connector, a couple light bulbs, the Serena RC shades, a tripper sensor, a pivot power genius, the Aeros air conditioner, and a plug-in lamp module. And he does give a review of each of them. Apparently, the pivot power is dumb. The light module doesn't work. The Aeros is actually pretty cool, which we've talked about that actually on the show independently. Essentially, for this guy, he says it was horrible. I mean, you heard it. 6 months of setting it up. Apparently, his Wink Hub didn't work initially, and so he had to go back and redo everything.
That's
and
brutal.
Apparently, to set up a light bulb, you can't have any other smart light bulbs in any of the same sockets. And so, because it can get confused. And so he's like, so we literally have to take out all your light bulbs and do one
what?
At a time.
What?
And then when you're done, you can put them all back in.
What? And
yeah, he's like, definitely not simple or easy. And he's like, and the lights sometimes work. He's got these videos of this one he uses. It's the tripper thing, which is... essentially, it's a sensor for your door. So when your door opens and closes, the lights will turn off and on. And he does this video of it, and he opens the door and then closes it. And you watch the lights like randomly turn on at different times.
Oh my gosh!
I don't know. I don't get it. He said the geofence doesn't work at all. So that was actually really frustrating. And he was just so frustrated by the whole thing.
That's interesting. I will say this. That makes me really glad that I got my Philip Hughes, because granted, the one caveat I will say is my use case is relatively simple. They're just light bulbs. They're not a whole suite of different connected devices. And it's just two bulbs that are in the same room, and they're almost always set to the same settings. So It's because it's in my room, nobody else ever has to turn it on or off. I think things become more complicated once you get to actually having to script different settings for different rooms at different times. And part of the reason why I haven't pushed my roommate to go along with this and get smart bulbs for our entire place is because there's a part of me that's like, there are certain things that I can't figure out how to automate intelligently and without some sort of a more holistic solution. And one of the big problems is it's like, so my geofence works very well. I very, very rarely, I'd say probably once a month, I walk into my room and the lights aren't on and they should be. And since they work almost exclusively off of the geofence, the only time they don't is when I wake up in the morning, which they are set to their own alarm, and B, when I go to bed at night, which is variable, so I do that manually. But the rest of the time, they do it all automatically, multiple times a day. So that works, you know, I'm very pleased with that. But it's like I keep asking the question of like, okay, let's say I'm home and watching a movie, and my roommate comes home, and the lights and that geofence picks up that they're coming home. Well, I want the main living room to stay the same if I'm already there and have everything set, you know. And I want, if I'm not there, I want it to go off. And I don't know how to set that all up. And I've looked into it, and it's not super straightforward. You actually have to start using third-party stuff and kind of managing it outside of the Philips hardware software solution, which is, I think, the real advantage of like a HomeKit style thing is that it can, hopefully it can allow you to do that kind of intelligent stuff. But then all of a sudden you have moved fully into the, it's not easy anymore. It is a tremendous amount of setup, and it's not a smart setup process. I think that is, if there's one place for innovation in the smart home place, like where you could really run away with it, it is in really, 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 really improving.
Well, now is the promise of Wink.
Which ironically, it turns out it's not at all. You know, the Hues are great because you can independently program all the different bulbs and stuff with everything plugged in. Like they're you know, evidently that is so stupid that you can't even have them powered up without it confusing them. But yeah, that just sounds obnoxious. Wink. Well, I think Wink over promised, under delivered. But I will say this, since only my room is set up on this smart bulb thing, and it's very fun and cool to have, and I like it, but the rest of the house is all on light switches really aren't that bad. Like, they just, I'm running the current experiment with my life, and I can tell you, light switches work pretty dang well.
And that's like I was talking about, right? They've been thought through.
Yeah, exactly. And the only thing that light switches can't do that these can is the whole waking you up. And really and truly, the huge advantage to me is that over like what other light sources do is, you know, you can get like light lamps that run on a timer and this they turn on. But that's not what I want. I want the dimming and it comes up and comes down. And I want it to, you know, it's like once you've actually invested in the automatic, like the timers and stuff that do a lot of that sort of automated control for you, and you get the LED bulb, all of a sudden you're talking the price point's the same, so why not get the fully integrated bulbs that allow you to turn it off from across the globe? And you know, they're more future proof. So I sit there and I go, I have a particular use case that you cannot beat with traditional means, and any competitor is as expensive. Any equivalent competitor is as expensive. So it makes sense for me. But I can tell you my concern is that I think it will add one or two steps to the process if we do the rest of the apartment. So I don't want to do it. Like, and one or two steps every single time. So I don't want to do it because it's just like, it's not easy enough yet. And, because they're, you know, as smart as they are, they're still pretty stupid.
I agree. And it's like, I think there's a couple missing components. I think voice control was critical to this. You know, you think about like him, he talks about six taps to the app. You know, you just want to be able to go, you know, hey Siri, turn off my lights.
Don't do that. You're going to wake up my phone.
And, you know, so you want to do that. You know, and that beats any taps, right? And there's your use case for, you know, or okay, Google, whatever. You know, for that. I think the other one is like, you know, and this is where like something like CarPlay will be, you know, super important because it'll start to integrate that kind of stuff where, you know, it'd be nice where you trip that geofence and it asks you, hey, what do you want to do here? And you could say, you know, do nothing or run coming home protocol or, you know, whatever. Or it can start to guess, you know, because it knows when you come home at 5 o'clock every day and if no one else is detected to be home, all right, you probably want to turn everything on. You know, and so you can start to have some of that stuff built out where it gives you some choices. Like we were talking about the home pages, you know, it customizes it. It says, are you here for like 5 minutes or are you home for the rest of the day?
You know? Yeah. Yeah. And,
should I turn? Because if you're only here picking something up, I'm not going to turn the heater on.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I, you know, I really do have a big dilemma with the, you know, a lot of this, like a lot of the scene setting stuff. And this is what gets me is it's like, if I change the scenes of something specifically, and then somebody, you know, if two phones are connected to the same hub, so we're controlling a house, and I decided to dim all the lights for whatever reason, and then somebody trips the geofence, that overrides it and resets everything. And that's, you know, it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, it's got to be smarter. It's really got to be smarter. The hardware is there, I think, especially if you get, you know, stuff that's not cheap and stupid like the Wink. I'm gonna start making myself feel better about spending so much on light bulbs.
That's fine.
But you know, but that's the real advantage is that, you know, or that's the real thing is we got to get way smarter than we are if we want these things to take off. And you know, we definitely will. And I think, you know, I think people like Apple will hopefully know that, realize that, and will help us take big steps in that, but we're still pretty far.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, as this article shows. Yeah, anyways, I thought it was interesting. That guy was not happy with his wink. It happens.
Yeah.
It happens. All right, man. That's it.
Nice.
That's all we got. So, with that, okay, I gotta change my sounds up here, otherwise it doesn't work right. So with that, we want to thank all of you for joining us, and thank you so much for listening to episode 177. We really do appreciate it. So don't forget to check out the show notes at furloughbros.com. Again, that's episode 177. All the links and stories that we talked about will be there. My name is James Furlough, and my let me think here. How do I want to say this? My spoken for brother? Is that the way to say it?
Yeah.
My attached. You're not hitched, mm-hmm. but you're attached. You know.
Exclusive.
My exclusive brother. That sounds weird, but yeah, I'll go with it. My exclusive brother is Matthew Furlough. So we will talk next time.